for the Greeks as I felt for Artemis. A guilty fascination. An admiration that turns to love. But too much love is poison. Especially when that love is not returned. If you do not understand that already, Reina Ramirez Arellano, you soon will. Hilla limped forward, her knives still in hand.
Sister, why do you let this beast talk? Let's put him down.
Can you? Orion mused. Many have tried. Even Artemis's own brother, Apollo, was not able to kill me back in the ancient times. He had to use trickery to get rid of me.
He didn't like you hanging out with his sister?
Reina listened for more sounds from the roofs, but heard nothing.
Apollo was jealous.
The giant's fingers curled around his bowstring. He drew it back, setting the bow's wheels and pulleys spinning.
He feared I might charm Artemis into forgetting her vows of maidenhood. And who knows, without Apollo's interference, perhaps I would have. She would have been happier.
As your servant, Hilla growled. Your meek little housewife?
It hardly matters now, Orion said. At any rate, Apollo inflicted me with madness, a bloodlust to kill all the beasts of the earth. I slaughtered thousands before my mother, Gia, finally put a stop to my rampage. She summoned a giant scorpion from the earth. It stabbed me in the back and its poison killed me. I owe her for that.
You owe Gia, Reina said, for killing you.
Orion's mechanical pupils spiraled into tiny glowing points.
My mother showed me the truth. I was fighting against my own nature, and it brought me nothing but misery. Giants are not meant to love mortals or gods. Gia helped me accept what I am. Eventually, we all must return home, Praetor. We must embrace our past, no matter how bitter and dark.
He nodded his chin toward the villa behind her.
Just as you have done. You have your own share of ghosts, eh?
Reina drew her sword.
You can't learn anything from ghosts, she had told her sister.
Perhaps she couldn't learn anything from giants either.
This is not my home, she said, and we are not alike.
I have seen the truth.
The giant sounded truly sympathetic.
You cling to the fantasy that you can make your enemies love you. You cannot, Reina. There is no love for you at Camp Half-Blood.
Aphrodite's words echoed in her head.
No demigod shall heal your heart.
Reina studied the giant's handsome, cruel face, his glowing, mechanical eyes. For a terrible moment, she could understand how even a goddess, even an eternal maiden like Artemis, might fall for Orion's honeyed words.
I could have killed you 20 times by now, the giant said. You realize that, don't you? Let me spare you. A simple show of faith is all I need. Tell me where the statue is.
Reina almost dropped her sword.
Where the statue is?
Orion hadn't located the Athena Parthenos. The hunter's camouflage had worked. All this time, the giant had been tracking Reina, which meant that even if she died right now, Nico and Coach Hedge might stay safe. The quest was not doomed. She felt as if she'd shed 100 pounds of armor. She laughed. The sound echoed down the cobblestone street.
Phoebe outsmarted you, she said. By tracking me, you lost the statue. Now my friends are free to continue their mission.
Orion curled his lip.
Oh, I will find them, Praetor, after I deal with you.
Then I suppose, Reina said, we will have to deal with you first. That is my sister, Hilla said proudly.
Together, they charged. The giant's first shot would have skewered Reina, but Hilla was fast. She sliced the arrow out of the air and lunged at Orion. Reina stabbed at his chest. The giant intercepted both of their attacks with his bow. He kicked Hilla backward into the hood of an old Chevy. Half a dozen cats scattered from underneath it. The giant spun, a dagger suddenly in his hand, and Reyna just managed to dodge the blade. She stabbed again, ripping through his leather jerkin, but only managed to graze his chest.
"You fight well, Preeter," he admitted, "but not well enough to live."
Reyna willed her blade to extend into a pillum.
"My death means nothing."
If her friends could continue their quest in peace, she was fully prepared to go down fighting. But first, she intended to hurt this giant so badly he would never forget her name.
"What about your sister's death?" Orion asked. "Does that mean something?"
Faster than Reyna could blink, he sent an arrow flying toward Hilla's chest. A scream built in Reyna's throat, but somehow Hilla caught the arrow. Hilla slid off the hood of the car and snapped the arrow with one hand.
"I am the Queen of the Amazons, you idiot. I wear the royal belt. With the strength it gives me, I will avenge the Amazons you killed today."
Hilla grabbed the front fender of the Chevy and flipped the entire car toward Orion, as easily as if she were splashing him with water in a swimming pool. The Chevy sandwiched Orion against the wall of the nearest house. Stucco cracked. A banana tree toppled. More cats fled. Reyna ran toward the wreckage, but the giant bellowed and shoved away the car.
"You will die together," he promised.
Two arrows appeared knocked in his bow, the string fully drawn back. Then the rooftops exploded with noise.
"Die!"
Gleason Hedge dropped directly behind Orion, smacking his baseball bat over the giant's head so hard the Louisville slugger cracked in half. At the same time, Nico DeAngelo dropped in front. He slashed his Stygian sword across the giant's bowstring, causing pulleys and gears to zip and creak, the string recoiling with hundreds of pounds of force until it whacked Orion in the nose like a hydraulic bullwhip.
"Ow!"
Orion staggered backward, dropping his bow. Hunters of Artemis appeared along the rooftops, shooting Orion full of silver arrows until he resembled a glowing hedgehog. He staggered blindly, holding his nose, his face streaming with golden ichor. Someone grabbed Reyna's arm.
"Come on!"
Thalia Grace had returned.
"Go with her!"
Hilla ordered. Reyna's heart felt like it was shattering.
"Sister, you have to leave now."
It was exactly what Hilla had said to her 6 years ago, the night they escaped their father's house.
"I'll delay Orion as long as possible."
Hilla grabbed one of the giant's legs. She yanked him off balance and tossed him several blocks down the Calle San Jose, to the general consternation of several dozen more cats. The hunters ran after him along the rooftops, shooting arrows that exploded in Greek fire, wreathing the giant in flames.
"Your sister's right," Thalia said. "You need to go."
Nico and Hedge fell in alongside her, both looking very pleased with themselves. They had apparently gone shopping at the Barracina souvenir shop, where they'd replaced their dirty, tattered shirts with loud tropical numbers.
"Nico,"
Reyna said.
"You look..."
"Not a word about the shirt," he warned. "Not one word."
"Why did you come looking for me?" she demanded. "You could have gotten away free. The giant has been tracking me. If you had just left..."
"You're welcome, Cupcake," the coach grumbled. "We weren't about to leave without you. Now let's get out of..."
He glanced over Reyna's shoulder, and his voice faltered. Reyna turned. Behind her, the second-story balconies of her family house were crowded with glowing figures. A man with a forked beard and rusted conquistador armor. Another bearded man in 18th-century pirate clothes, his shirt peppered with gunshot holes. A lady in a bloody nightgown. A U.S. Navy captain in his dress whites. And a dozen more Reyna knew from her childhood, all of them glaring at her accusingly, their voices whispering in her mind.
"Traitor. Murderer."
"No."
Reyna felt like she was 10 years old again. She wanted to curl up in the corner of her room and press her hands over her ears to stop the whispering. Nico took her arm.
Reyna, who are they? What do they...
I can't, she pleaded. I can't.
She'd spent so many years building a dam inside her to hold back the fear. Now it broke. Her strength washed away.
It's all right.
Nico gazed up at the balconies. The ghosts disappeared, but Reyna knew they weren't really gone. They were never really gone.
We'll get you out of here, Nico promised. Let's move.
Thalia took Reyna's other arm. The four of them ran for the restaurant and the Athena Parthenos. Behind them, Reyna heard Orion roaring in pain, Greek fire exploding. And in her mind, the voices still whispered,
Murderer, traitor, you can never flee your crime.
Chapter 25. Jason. Jason rose from his deathbed so he could drown with the rest of the crew. The ship was tilting so violently he had to climb the floor to get out of sickbay. The hull creaked. The engine groaned like a dying water buffalo. Cutting through the roar of the wind, the goddess Nike screamed from the stables,
You can do better, Storm! Give me 110%!
Jason climbed the stairs to the middle deck. His legs shook, his head spun. The ship pitched to port, knocking him against the opposite wall. Hazel stumbled out of her cabin, hugging her stomach.
I hate the ocean!
When she saw him, her eyes widened.
What are you doing out of bed?
I'm going up there, he insisted. I can help. Hazel looked like she wanted to argue. Then the ship tilted to starboard, and she staggered toward the bathroom, her hand over her mouth. Jason fought his way to the stairs. He hadn't been out of bed in a day and a half, ever since the girls got back from Sparta, and he'd unexpectedly collapsed. His muscles rebelled at the effort. His gut felt like Michael Varus was standing behind him, repeatedly stabbing him and yelling,
Die like a Roman! Die like a Roman!
Jason forced down the pain. He was tired of people taking care of him, whispering how worried they were. He was tired of dreaming about being a shish kebab. He'd spent enough time nursing the wound in his gut. Either it would kill him or it wouldn't. He wasn't going to wait around for the wound to decide. He had to help his friends. Somehow, he made it above deck. What he saw there made him almost as nauseous as Hazel. A wave the size of a skyscraper crashed over the forward deck, washing the front crossbows and half the port railing out to sea. The sails were ripped to shreds. Lightning flashed all around, hitting the sea like spotlights. Horizontal rain blasted Jason's face. The clouds were so dark, he honestly couldn't tell if it was day or night. The crew was doing what they could, which wasn't much. Leo had lashed himself to the console with a bungee cord harness. That might have seemed like a good idea when he rigged it up, but every time a wave hit, he was washed away, then smacked back into his control board like a human paddle ball. Piper and Annabeth were trying to save the rigging. Since Sparta, they'd become quite a team, able to work together without even talking, which was just as well, since they couldn't have heard each other over the storm. Frank, at least Jason assumed it was Frank, had turned into a gorilla. He was swinging upside down off the starboard rail, using his massive strength and his flexible feet to hang on while he untangled some broken oars. Apparently, the crew was trying to get the ship airborne, but even if they managed to take off, Jason wasn't sure the sky would be any safer. Even Festus, the figurehead, was trying to help. He spewed fire at the rain, though that didn't seem to discourage the storm. Only Percy was having much luck. He stood by the center mast, his hands extended like he was on a tightrope. Every time the ship tilted, he pushed in the opposite direction, and the hall stabilized. He summoned giant fists of water from the ocean to slam into the larger waves before they could reach the deck, so it looked like the ocean was hitting itself repeatedly in the face. With the storm as bad as it was, Jason realized the ship would have already capsized or been smashed to bits if Percy wasn't on the job. Jason staggered toward the mast. Leo yelled something, probably, "Go downstairs!" But Jason only waved back. He made it to Percy's side and grabbed his shoulder. Percy nodded like, "Sup." He didn't look shocked or demand that Jason go back to sickbay, which Jason appreciated. Percy could stay dry if he concentrated, but obviously he had bigger things to worry about right now. His dark hair was plastered to his face. His clothes were soaked and ripped. He shouted something in Jason's ear, but Jason could only make out a few words.
"Thing down! Stop it!"
Percy pointed over the side. "Something is causing the storm?" Jason asked. Percy grinned and tapped his ears. Clearly, he couldn't hear a word. He made a gesture with his hand like diving overboard. Then he tapped Jason on the chest.
"You want me to go?"
Jason felt kind of honored. Everybody else had been treating him like a glass vase, but Percy, well, he seemed to figure that if Jason was on deck, he was ready for action.
"Happy to," Jason shouted. "But I can't breathe underwater."
Percy shrugged.
"Sorry, can't hear you."
Then Percy ran to the starboard rail, pushed another massive wave away from the ship, and jumped overboard. Jason glanced at Piper and Annabeth. They both clung to the rigging, staring at him in shock. Piper's expression said, "Are you out of your mind?" He gave her an okay sign, partly to assure her that he would be fine, which he wasn't sure about, partly to agree that he was in fact crazy, which he was sure about. He staggered to the railing and looked up at the storm. Winds raged, clouds churned. Jason sensed an entire army of Venti swirling above him, too angry and agitated to take physical form, but hungry for destruction. He raised his arm and summoned a lasso of wind. Jason had learned long ago that the best way to control a crowd of bullies was to pick the meanest, biggest kid and force him into submission. Then the others would fall in line. He lashed out with his wind rope, searching for the strongest, most ornery Ventus in the storm. He lassoed a nasty patch of storm cloud and pulled it in.
"You're serving me today."
Howling in protest, the Ventus encircled him. The storm above the ship seemed to lessen just a bit, as if the other Venti were thinking, "Oh, crud, that guy means business." Jason levitated off the deck, encased in his own miniature tornado. Spinning like a corkscrew, he plunged into the water. Jason assumed things would be calmer underwater. Not so much. Of course, that could have been due to his mode of travel. Riding a cyclone to the bottom of the ocean definitely gave him some unexpected turbulence. He dropped and swerved with no apparent logic, his ears popping, his stomach pressed against his ribs. Finally, he drifted to a stop next to Percy, who stood on a ledge jutting over a deeper abyss.
"Hey," Percy said.
Jason could hear him perfectly, though he wasn't sure how.
"What's going on?"
In his Ventus air cocoon, his own voice sounded like he was talking through a vacuum cleaner. Percy pointed into the void.
"Wait for it."
3 seconds later, a shaft of green light swept through the darkness like a spotlight, then disappeared.
"Something's down there," Percy said, "stirring up this storm."
He turned and sized up Jason's tornado.
"Nice outfit. Can you hold it together if we go deeper?"
"I have no idea how I'm doing this," Jason said.
"Okay," Percy said. "Well, just don't get knocked unconscious."
"Shut up, Jackson." Percy grinned.
"Let's see what's down there."
They sank so deep that Jason couldn't see anything except Percy swimming next to him in the dim light of their gold and bronze blades. Every so often, the green searchlight shot upward. Percy swam straight toward it. Jason's Ventus crackled and roared, straining to escape. The smell of ozone made him lightheaded, but he kept his shell of air intact. At last, the darkness lessened below them. Soft white luminous patches, like schools of jellyfish, floated before Jason's eyes. As he approached the seafloor, he realized the patches were glowing fields of algae surrounding the ruins of a palace. Silt swirled through empty courtyards with abalone floors. Barnacle-covered Greek columns marched into the gloom. In the center of the complex rose a citadel larger than Grand Central Station, its walls encrusted with pearls, its domed golden roof cracked open like an egg. "Atlantis?" Jason asked. "That's a myth," Percy said. "Don't we deal in myths?" "No, I mean it's a made-up myth, not like an actual true myth."
"So this is why Annabeth is the brains of the operation, then."
"Shut up, Grace."
They floated through the broken dome and down into shadows.
"This place seems familiar."
Percy's voice became edgy.
"Almost like I've been here."
The green spotlight flashed directly below them, blinding Jason. He dropped like a stone, touching down on the smooth marble floor. When his vision cleared, he saw that they weren't alone. Standing before them was a 20-foot-tall woman in a flowing green dress, cinched at the waist with a belt of abalone shells. Her skin was as luminous white as the fields of algae. Her hair swayed and glowed like jellyfish tendrils. Her face was beautiful but unearthly, her eyes too bright, her features too delicate, her smile too cold, as if she'd been studying human smiles and hadn't quite mastered the art. Her hands rested on a disc of polished green metal about 6 feet in diameter, sitting on a bronze tripod. It reminded Jason of a steel drum he'd once seen a street performer play at the Embarcadero in San Francisco. The woman turned the metal disc like a steering wheel. A shaft of green light shot upward, churning the water, shaking the walls of the old palace. Shards from the domed ceiling broke and tumbled down in slow motion.
"You're making the storm," Jason said.
"Indeed I am."
The woman's voice was melodic, yet it had a strange resonance, as if it extended past the human range of hearing. Pressure built between Jason's eyes. His sinuses felt like they might explode.
"Okay, I'll bite," Percy said. "Who are you and what do you want?"
The woman turned toward him.
"Why, I am your sister, Perseus Jackson. And I wanted to meet you before you die."
Chapter 26. Jason. Jason saw two options: fight or talk. Usually, when faced with a creepy 20-foot-tall lady with jellyfish hair, he would have gone with fight. But since she called Percy brother, that made him hesitate.
"Percy, do you know this individual?"
Percy shook his head.
"Doesn't look like my mom, so I'm gonna guess we're related on the godly side. You a daughter of Poseidon, Miss,
The pale lady raked her fingernails against the metal disc, making a screeching sound like a tortured whale.
"No one knows me," she sighed. "Why would I assume my own brother would recognize me? I am Kimopolia."
Percy and Jason exchanged looks.
"So," Percy said, "we're going to call you Kim, and you'd be a, Nereid, then? Minor goddess?"
"Minor?"
"By which," Jason said quickly, "he means under the drinking age,
Because, obviously, you're so young and beautiful.
Percy flashed him a look. Nice save.
The goddess turned her full attention to Jason. She pointed her index finger and traced his outline in the water. Jason could feel his captured air spirit rippling around him, as if it were being tickled.
"Jason Grace," said the goddess. "Son of Jupiter."
"Yeah, I'm a friend of Percy's."
Kim's narrowed.
"So it's true. These times make for strange friends and unexpected enemies. The Romans never worshipped me. To them, I was a nameless fear, a sign of Neptune's greatest wrath. They never worshipped Kimopolia, the goddess of violent sea storms."
She spun her disk. Another beam of green light flashed upward, churning the water and making the ruins rumble.
Yeah, Percy said. "The Romans aren't big on navies. They had, like, one rowboat, which I sank. Speaking of violent storms, you're doing a first-rate job upstairs."
"Thank you," said Kim.
"Thing is, our ship is caught in it, and it's kind of being ripped apart. I'm sure you didn't mean to."
"Oh, yes, I did."
"You did?"
Percy grimaced.
"Well, that sucks. I don't suppose you'd cut it out then, if we asked nicely?"
"No,"
the goddess agreed.
"Even now, the ship is close to sinking. I'm rather amazed it's held together this long. Excellent workmanship."
Sparks flew from Jason's arms into the tornado. He thought about Piper and the rest of the crew, frantically trying to keep the ship in one piece. By coming down here, he and Percy had left the others defenseless. They had to act soon. Besides, Jason's air was getting stale. He wasn't sure if it was possible to use up a Ventus by inhaling it, but if he was going to have to fight, he'd better take on Kim before he ran out of oxygen. The thing was, fighting a goddess on her home court wouldn't be easy. Even if they managed to take her down, there was no guarantee the storm would stop.
"So, Kim," he said, "what could we do to make you change your mind and let our ship go?"
Kim gave him that creepy alien smile.
"Son of Jupiter, do you know where you are?"
Jason was tempted to answer, "Underwater."
"You mean these ruins? An ancient palace?"
"Indeed," Kim said. "The original palace of my father, Poseidon."
Percy snapped his fingers, which sounded like a muffled explosion.
"That's why I recognized it. Dad's new crib in the Atlantic is kind of like this."
"I wouldn't know," Kim said. "I am never invited to see my parents. I can only wander the ruins of their old domains. They find my presence disruptive."
She spun her wheel again. The entire back wall of the building collapsed, sending a cloud of silt and algae through the chamber. Fortunately, the Ventus acted like a fan, blowing the debris out of Jason's face.
"Disruptive?" Jason said. "You?"
"My father does not welcome me in his court," Kim said. "He restricts my powers. This storm above? I haven't had this much fun in ages. Yet, it is only a small taste of what I can do."
"A little goes a long way," Percy said. "Anyway, to Jason's question about changing your mind."
"My father even married me off," Kim said, "without my permission. He gave me away like a trophy to Briares, a hundred-handed one, as a reward for supporting the gods in the war with Kronos, eons ago."
Percy's face brightened.
"Hey, I know Briares. He's a friend of mine. I freed him from Alcatraz.
Yes, I know.
Kim's eyes glinted coldly.
I hate my husband. I was not at all pleased to have him back.
Oh, so is Briarys around?
Percy asked hopefully. Kim's laugh sounded like dolphin chatter.
He's off at Mount Olympus in New York, shoring up the gods' defenses. Not that it will matter. My point, dear brother, is that Poseidon has never treated me fairly. I like to come here, to his old palace, because it pleases me to see his works in ruins. Someday soon, his new palace will look like this one, and the seas will rage unchecked.
Percy looked at Jason.
This is the part where she tells us she's working for Gia.
Yeah, Jason said. And the Earth Mother promised her a better deal once the gods are destroyed, blah, blah, blah. He turned to Kim.
You understand that Gia won't keep her promises, right? She's using you, just like she's using the giants.
I am touched by your concern, said the goddess. The Olympian gods, on the other hand, have never used me, eh?
Percy spread his hands.
At least the Olympians are trying. After the last Titan War, they started paying more attention to the other gods. A lot of them have cabins now at Camp Half-Blood. Hecate, Hades, Hebe, Hypnos, and probably some that don't begin with H2. We give them offerings at every meal. Cool banners, special recognition in the end of summer program.
And have I gotten such offerings?
Kim asked.
Well, no. We didn't know you existed, but...
Then save your words, brother.
Kim's jellyfish tentacle hair floated toward him, as if anxious to paralyze new prey.
I have heard so much about the great Percy Jackson. The giants are quite obsessed with capturing you. I must say... I don't see what the fuss is about.
Thanks, sis, but if you're going to try to kill me, I gotta warn you it's been tried before. I've faced a lot of goddesses recently. Nike, Aklis, even Nyx herself. Compared to them, you're not scaring me. Also, you laugh like a dolphin.
Kim's delicate nostrils flared. Jason got his sword ready.
Oh, I won't kill you, Kim said. My part of the bargain was simply to get your attention. Someone else is here, though, who very much wants to kill you.
Above them, at the edge of the broken roof, a dark shape appeared, a figure even taller than Chemopolia.
The son of Neptune, boomed a deep voice.
The giant floated down. Clouds of dark, viscous fluid, poison perhaps, curled from his blue skin. His green breastplate was fashioned to resemble a cluster of open, hungry mouths. In his hands were the weapons of a retiarius, a trident and a weighted net. Jason had never met this particular giant, but he'd heard stories.
Polybides, he said, the anti-Poseidon.
The giant shook his dreadlocks. A dozen serpents swam free, each one lime green with a frilled crown around its head. Basilisks.
Indeed, son of Rome, the giant said. But if you'll excuse me, my immediate business is with Perseus Jackson. I tracked him all the way across Tartarus. Now, here in his father's ruins, I mean to crush him, once and for all.
Chapter 27. Jason. Jason hated basilisks. The little scumsuckers loved to burrow under the temples in New Rome. Back when Jason was a centurion, his cohort always got the unpopular chore of clearing out their nests. A basilisk didn't look like much, just an arm-length serpent with yellow eyes and a white frill collar. But it moved fast and could kill anything it touched. Jason had never faced more than two at a time. Now a dozen were swimming around the giant's legs. The only good thing, underwater, basilisks wouldn't be able to breathe fire, but that didn't make them any less deadly. Two of the serpents shot toward Percy. He sliced them in half. The other 10 swirled around him, just out of blade's reach. They writhed back and forth in a hypnotic pattern, looking for an opening. One bite, one touch was all it would take.
"Hey!" Jason yelled. "How about some love over here?"
The snakes ignored him. So did the giant, who stood back and watched with a smug smile, apparently happy for his pets to do the killing.
"Hemopolia!"
Jason tried his best to pronounce her name right.
"You have to stop this!"
She regarded him with her glowing white eyes.
"Why would I do that? The Earth Mother has promised me unrestricted power. Could you make me a better offer?"
A better offer. He sensed the possibility of an opening, room to negotiate. But what did he have that a storm goddess would want? The basilisks closed in on Percy. He blasted them away with currents of water, but they just kept circling.
"Hey, basilisks!" Jason yelled.
Still no reaction. He could charge in and help, but even together, he and Percy couldn't possibly fight off 10 basilisks at once. He needed a better solution. He glanced up. A thunderstorm raged above, but they were hundreds of feet down. He couldn't possibly summon lightning at the bottom of the sea. Could he? Even if he could, water conducted electricity a little too well. He might fry Percy. But he couldn't think of a better option. He thrust up his sword. Immediately, the blade glowed red hot. A diffuse cloud of yellow light billowed through the depths, like someone had poured liquid neon into the water. The light hit Jason's sword and sprayed outward in 10 separate tendrils, zapping the basilisks. Their eyes went dark. Their frills disintegrated. All 10 serpents turned belly up and floated dead in the water.
"Next time," Jason said, "look at me when I'm talking to you."
Polybides' smile curdled.
"Are you so anxious to die, Roman?"
Percy raised his sword. He hurled himself at the giant, but Polybides swept his hand through the water, leaving an arc of black, oily poison. Percy charged straight into it, faster than Jason could yell,
"Dude, what are you thinking?"
Percy dropped Riptide. He gasped, clawing at his throat. The giant threw his weighted net, and Percy collapsed to the floor, hopelessly entangled as the poison thickened around him.
"Let him go!"
Jason's voice cracked with panic. The giant chuckled.
"Don't worry, son of Jupiter. Your friend will take a long time to die. After all the trouble he's caused me, I wouldn't dream of killing him quickly."
Noxious clouds expanded around the giant, filling the ruins like thick cigar smoke. Jason scrambled backward, not fast enough, but his Ventus proved a useful filter. As the poison engulfed him, the miniature tornado spun faster, repelling the clouds. Hemopolia wrinkled her nose and waved away the darkness, but otherwise it didn't seem to affect her. Percy writhed in the net, his face turning green. Jason charged to help him, but the giant blocked him with his huge trident.
"Oh, I can't let you ruin my fun," Polybides chided. "The poison will kill him eventually. But first come the paralysis and hours of excruciating pain. I want him to have the full experience. He can watch as I destroy you, Jason Grace."
Polybides advanced slowly, giving Jason plenty of time to contemplate the 3-story-tall tower of armor and muscle bearing down on him. He dodged the trident, and, using his Ventus to shoot forward, jabbed his sword into the giant's reptilian leg. Polybides roared and stumbled, golden ichor pluming from the wound.
"Kim!" Jason yelled. "Is this really what you want?"
The storm goddess looked rather bored, idly spinning her metal disc.
"Unlimited power? Why not?"
"But is it any fun?" Jason asked. "So you destroy our ship. You destroy the entire coastline of the world. Once Gia wipes out human civilization, who's left to fear you? You'll still be unknown."
Polybides turned.
"You are a pest, son of Jupiter. You will be crushed!"
Jason tried to summon more lightning. Nothing happened. If he ever met his dad, he'd have to petition for an increased daily allowance of bolts. Jason managed to avoid the prongs of the trident again, but the giant swung the other end around and smacked him in the chest. Jason reeled back, stunned and in pain. Polybides came in for the kill. Just before the trident would have perforated him, Jason's Ventus acted on its own. It spiraled sideways, whisking Jason 30 feet across the courtyard. "Thanks, buddy," Jason thought. "I owe you some air freshener." If the Ventus liked that idea, Jason couldn't tell.
"Actually, Jason Grace," Kim said, studying her fingernails, "now that you mention it, I do enjoy being feared by mortals. I am not feared enough."
"I can help with that."
Jason dodged another swipe of the trident. He extended his gladius into a javelin and poked Polybides in the eye.
"Ugh!"
The giant staggered. Percy writhed in the net, but his movements were getting sluggish. Jason needed to hurry. He had to get Percy to sickbay, and if the storm kept raging above them, there wouldn't be any sickbay to get him to. He flew to Kim's side.
"You know gods depend on mortals. The more we honor you, the more powerful you get."
"I wouldn't know. I've never been honored."
She ignored Polybides, who was now stampeding around her, trying to swat Jason out of his whirlwind. Jason did his best to keep the goddess between them.
"I can change that," he promised. "I will personally arrange a shrine for you on Temple Hill in New Rome. Your first ever Roman shrine. I'll raise one at Camp Half-Blood as well, right on the shore of Long Island Sound. Imagine being honored..."
"And feared."
"And feared by both Greeks and Romans. You'll be famous."
"Stop talking!"
Polybides swung his trident like a baseball bat. Jason ducked. Kim did not. The giant slammed her in the ribcage so hard that strands of her jellyfish hair came loose and drifted through the poison water. Polybides' eyes widened.
"I'm sorry, Kimopolia. You shouldn't have been in the way."
"In the way?"
The goddess straightened.
"I am in the way?"
"You heard him," Jason said. "You're nothing but a tool for the giants. They'll cast you aside as soon as they're through destroying the mortals. Then, no demigods, no shrines, no fear, no respect."
"Lies!"
Polybides tried to stab him, but Jason hid behind the goddess's dress.
"Kimopolia, when Gia rules, you will rage and storm without restraint."
"Will there be mortals to terrorize?"
Kim asked.
"Well, no!"
"Ships to destroy? Demigods to cower in awe?"
"Help me," Jason urged. "Together, a goddess and demigod can kill a giant."
"No!"
Polybides suddenly looked very nervous.
"No, that's a terrible idea. Gia will be most displeased."
"If Gia wakes," Jason said.
"The mighty Kimopolia can help us make sure that never happens. Then All demigods will honor you big time.
Will they cower? Kim asked.
Tons of cowering. Plus your name in the summer program. A custom-designed banner. A cabin at Camp Half-Blood. Two shrines. I'll even throw in a Chemopolia action figure.
No! Polybides wailed. Not merchandising rights!
Chemopolia turned on the giant.
I'm afraid that deal beats what Gia has offered.
Unacceptable! The giant bellowed. You cannot trust this vile Roman!
If I don't honor the bargain, Jason said, Kim can always kill me. With Gia, she has no guarantee at all.
That, Kim said, is difficult to argue with.
As Polybides struggled to answer, Jason charged forward and stabbed his javelin into the giant's gut. Kim lifted her bronze disc from its pedestal.
Say goodbye, Polybides.
She spun the disc at the giant's neck. Turned out, the rim was sharp. Polybides found it difficult to say goodbye, since he no longer had a head. Chapter 28. Jason.
Poison is a nasty habit.
Chemopolia waved her hand and the murky clouds dissipated.
Secondhand poison can kill a person, you know.
Jason wasn't too fond of first-hand poison either, but he decided not to mention that. He cut Percy out of the net and propped him against the temple wall, enveloping him in the airy shell of the Ventus. The oxygen was getting thin, but Jason hoped it might expel the poison from his friend's lungs. It seemed to work. Percy doubled over and began to retch.
Ugh, thanks.
Jason exhaled with relief.
You had me worried there, bro.
Percy blinked, cross-eyed.
I'm still a little fuzzy, but did you promise Kim an action figure?
The goddess loomed over them.
Indeed he did, and I expect him to deliver.
I will, Jason said. When we win this war, I'm going to make sure all the gods get recognized.
He put a hand on Percy's shoulder.
My friend here started that process last summer. He made the Olympians promise to pay you guys more attention.
Kim sniffed.
We know what an Olympian promise is worth.
Which is why I'm going to finish the job.
Jason didn't know where these words were coming from, but the idea felt absolutely right.
I'll make sure none of the gods are forgotten at either camp. Maybe they'll get temples or cabins or at least shrines.
Or collectible trading cards, Kim suggested.
Sure.
Jason smiled.
I'll go back and forth between the camps until the job is done.
Percy whistled.
You're talking about dozens of gods.
Hundreds,
Kim corrected.
Well then, Jason said, it might take a while, but you'll be first on the list, Chemopolia, the storm goddess who beheaded a giant and saved our quest.
Kim stroked her jellyfish hair.
That will do nicely.
She regarded Percy.
Though I am still sorry I won't see you die.
I get that comment a lot, Percy said. Now about our ship?
Still in one piece, said the goddess. Not in very good shape, but you should be able to make it to Delos.
Thank you, Jason said.
Yeah, Percy said. And really, your husband Briaris is a good dude. You should give him a chance.
The goddess picked up her bronze disc.
Don't push your luck, brother. Briaris has 50 faces. All of them are ugly. He's got 100 hands, and he's still all thumbs around the house.
Okay, Percy relented. Not pushing my luck.
Kim turned over the disc, revealing straps on the bottom side like a shield.
She slipped it over her shoulders, Captain America style.
I will be watching your progress. Polybetes was not boasting when he warned that your blood would awaken the Earth Mother. The giants are very confident of this.
My blood personally? Percy asked.
Kim's smile was even creepier than usual.
I am not an oracle, but I heard what the seer Phineas told you in the city of Portland. You will face a sacrifice that you may not be able to make, and it will cost you the world. You have yet to face your fatal flaw, my brother. Look around. All works of gods and men eventually turn to ruins. Would it not be easier to flee into the depths with that girlfriend of yours?
Percy put his hands on Jason's shoulder and struggled to his feet.
Juno offered me a choice like that, back when I found Camp Jupiter. I'll give you the same answer. I don't run when my friends need me.
Kim turned up her palms.
And there is your flaw, being unable to step away. I will retreat to the depths and watch this battle unfold. You should know that the forces of the ocean are also at war. Your friend Hazel Levesque made quite an impression on the merpeople and on their mentors, Aphros and Bythos.
The fish pony dudes, Percy muttered. They didn't want to meet me.
Even now they are waging war for your sake, Kim said, trying to keep Gia's allies away from Long Island. Whether or not they will survive, that remains to be seen. As for you, Jason Grace, your path will be no easier than your friends. You will be tricked. You will face unbearable sorrow.
Jason tried to keep from sparking. He wasn't sure Percy's heart could take the shock.
Kim, you said you're not an oracle? They should give you the job. You're definitely depressing enough.
The goddess let loose her dolphin laugh.
You amuse me, son of Jupiter. I hope you live to defeat Gia.
Thanks, he said. Any pointers on defeating a goddess who can't be defeated?
Kimopolia tilted her head.
Oh, but you know the answer. You are a child of the sky, with storms in your blood. A primordial god has been defeated once before. You know of whom I speak.
Jason's insides started swirling faster than the Ventus.
Ouranos, the first god of the sky. But that means...
Yes.
Kim's alien features took on an expression that almost resembled sympathy.
Let us hope it does not come to that. If Gia does wake, well, your task will not be easy. But if you win, remember your promise, Pontifex.
Jason took a moment to process her words.
I'm not a priest.
No?
Kim's white eyes gleamed.
By the way, your Ventus servant says he wishes to be freed. Since he has helped you, he hopes you will let him go when you reach the surface. He promises he will not bother you a third time.
A third time?
Kim paused, as if listening.
He says he joined the storm above to take revenge on you. But had he known how strong you've become since the Grand Canyon, he never would have approached your ship.
The Grand Canyon?
Jason recalled that day on the Skywalk, when one of his jerk classmates turned out to be a wind spirit.
Dylan? Are you kidding me? I'm breathing Dylan?
Yes, Kim said. That seems to be his name.
Jason shuddered. I'll let him go as soon as I reach the surface. No worries.
Farewell, then, said the goddess, and may the fates smile upon you, assuming the fates survive.
They needed to leave. Jason was running out of air. Dylan air. Gross. And everyone on the Argo II would be worried about them. But Percy was still woozy from the poison,
so they sat on the edge of the ruined golden dome for a few minutes to let Percy catch his breath, or catch his water, whatever a son of Poseidon catches when he's at the bottom of the ocean.
"Thanks, man," Percy said. "You saved my life."
"Hey, that's what we do for our friends."
"But, the Jupiter guy saving the Poseidon guy at the bottom of the ocean? Maybe we can keep the details to ourselves? Otherwise, I'll never hear the end of it."
Jason grinned. "You got it. How you feeling?"
"Better. I have to admit, when I was choking on that poison, I kept thinking about Aklis, the misery goddess in Tartarus. I almost destroyed her with poison."
He shivered.
"It felt good, but in a bad way. If Annabeth hadn't stopped me..."
"But she did," Jason said. "That's another thing friends have to do for each other."
"Yeah. Thing is, as I was choking just now, I kept thinking, this is payback for Aklis. The fates are letting me die the same way I tried to kill that goddess. And, honestly, a part of me felt I deserved it. That's why I didn't try to control the giant's poison and move it away from me. That probably sounds crazy."
Jason thought back to Ithaca, when he was despairing over the visit from his mom's spirit.
"No, I think I get it."
Percy studied his face. When Jason didn't say any more, Percy changed the subject.
"What did Kim mean about defeating Gia? You mentioned Ouranos."
Jason stared at the silt swirling between the columns of the old palace.
"The Sky God. The Titans defeated him by calling him down to the Earth. They got him away from his home territory, ambushed him, held him down, and cut him up."
Percy looked like his nausea was coming back.
"How would we do that with Gia?"
Jason recalled a line from the prophecy. "To storm or fire, the world must fall." He had an idea what that meant now. But if he was right, Percy wouldn't be able to help. In fact, he might unintentionally make things harder.
"I don't run when my friends need me," Percy had said.
"And there is your flaw," Kim had warned, "being unable to step away."
Today was July 27th. In 5 days, Jason would know if he was right. "Let's get to Delos first," he said. "Apollo and Artemis might have some advice." Percy nodded, though he didn't seem satisfied with that answer.
"Why did Kimopolia call you a Pontiac?"
Jason's laugh literally cleared the air.
"Pontifex. It means priest."
"Oh." Percy frowned.
"Still sounds like a kind of car. The new Pontifex XLS. Will you have to wear a collar and bless people?"
"Nah. Romans used to have a Pontifex Maximus, who oversaw all the proper sacrifices and whatnot, to make sure none of the gods got mad, which I offered to do. I guess it does sound like a Pontifex's job."
"So you meant it?" Percy asked. "You're really going to try building shrines for all the minor gods?"
"Yeah, I never really thought about it before, but I like the idea of going back and forth between the two camps. Assuming, you know, we make it through next week and the two camps still exist.
What you did last year on Olympus, turning down immortality and asking the gods to play nice instead? That was noble, man."
Percy grunted.
"Believe me, some days I regret the choice." "Oh, you want to turn down our offer? Okay, fine. Zap! Lose your memory. Go to Tartarus."
"You did what a hero should do. I admire you for that. The least I can do, if we survive, is continue that work. Make sure all the gods get some recognition. Who knows? If the gods get along better, maybe we can stop more of these wars from breaking out."
"That would most definitely be good," Percy agreed. "You know, you look different. Better different. Does your wound still hurt?"
"My wound?" Jason had been so busy with the giant and the goddess,
he'd forgotten about the sword wound in his gut, even though he'd been dying from it in sickbay only an hour ago. He lifted his shirt and pulled away the bandages.